Okay, good morning. So welcome to a new course, a very short one, only three sessions on insight meditation. So some of you are probably new to me, to my courses. So over these three sessions, we're going to look at this particular type of meditation called insight meditation, or more commonly known by its Pali name, vipassana. So there are different types of vipassana or insight meditations. And of course, as the name implies, they aim to help us gain some insights, some understanding. And there are many different types of insights. It could be insight into impermanence, insight into death, and so on, within Buddhism. Yeah. So today, this course, we focus more on insight into the true causes of our suffering, according to the Buddha, and how to be free from that. So it has to do with the topic quite commonly known as selflessness, or no self, or sometimes also called emptiness. Yeah. And what I plan is to touch on three different approaches. They are based on different schools of Buddhist philosophy. So within Tibetan Buddhist tradition, usually when we study the different types of Buddhist philosophy, it is divided into four. There are four different schools. They're not really school, not like a school, you know, we're building, but there's a whole bunch of people. They don't necessarily live at the same time. They could be separated from one another by a few hundred years, a few decades. But they follow a certain way of interpreting or understanding the Buddha's teaching. And so later, Buddhist masters tend to group them together, you know, based on the similarity of their views and what they have been, how they explain the Buddha's teaching. And so they form four different groups or four different schools, according to, as it's presented in Tibetan Buddhism. So if you study Chinese Buddhism, you may find that it's presented a bit differently, and so on and so forth. Yeah. So among the four schools, the first one, usually known as Vaibhashika, which is actually historically quite similar, not the same, but quite similar to the modern Theravada tradition. Right? And this is the one where a lot of people, especially in the West, there's the source of insight meditation or vipassana. So if you, in the States, in the US, they are actually the earliest type of Buddhist meditation, you know, presented or to the public. Is there's a few main teachers, and they form, one of the first one, very famous, is called Insight Meditation Society, I think IMS, in Massachusetts. And so, and it started from there, and it spread throughout the rest of the Western world. And so that particular form of vipassana, or insight meditation, I'm not going to go through because it's so common. There are lots of books, lots of audios, and lots of information, also many teachers. So I focus on the other three schools, three different approaches. The second one is known in Sanskrit as Sautrantika, or Sutra school. Right? I won't go into detail why it is called Sutra school. Sutra is the Sanskrit word for discourse, the Buddha's discourse. Yeah, and for some reason, this school is known as the Sutra school. All right. But insight meditation in the Sutra school is quite interesting, and I think also very accessible. So it's good to learn about it and maybe give it a try in meditation and see whether you find it helpful or not. All right. So Sutra school make an important differentiation between what they call direct experiencing. Direct experiencing is what you see, what you hear, smell, taste, touch. Also, you can directly experience with the mind, but that is a little bit more esoteric. Yeah. So we stick to the five physical senses. So there's direct experiencing through our five physical senses, which we all can do. There's no hardship there. And then contrasting that is the other type of mental activity, which we can call thinking. Right? So thinking includes remembering what happened in the past, include imagining what is going to happen in the future. Thinking includes planning, include daydreaming, include commenting. You have an inner commentator about what is going on, about yourself, about other people, about this, about that. You know. So those are all those activities, mental activities, we can summarize them and call them thinking. So thoughts. Now, in Sutra School, the first lesson to learn is to differentiate between these two types of knowing. There are different ways of knowing or getting information, right? Direct experiencing through the senses and thinking, how we perceive things, how we do your understanding of the sources of your suffering. Because quite often, it is not so much the direct experiencing that is causing our suffering. Of course, some direct experiencing can be very unpleasant. Like, for example, sitting here and listen, if you don't like me, right? And then you are forced to sit here for 1.5 hours. That is absolute agony, isn't it? You probably want to be somewhere else. So that is unpleasant direct experiencing, okay? And as a result of that, you probably end up doing a lot of thinking. Oh, when is he going to finish? This and that. And la-di-da, la-di-da. And now, of course, nowadays, you have mobile phones. You can try to distract yourself with it. Yeah. So, but thinking is actually a source of a lot of our stress in the modern day. Right? So, the first lesson to learn is to differentiate between these two. When you are thinking and when you are direct experiencing. And sometimes, we are so bad at this that actually we are thinking. And we thought that we are directly experiencing. So one common old example that I always tell people is at work, you know, you open this email from your boss and you instantly get very upset. How dare he send me such an email? And off you go, blah, 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 blah. And I used to joke that I would spend the next 1 hour typing out a very, very long email response, right? I'll type it out just to give him a piece of my mind. How dare he say that to me in the email? Right? And then there's a voice that is, safe to draft. Safe to draft. Right? My boss doesn't, it's not, usually not in the same office as me previously. Yeah. So occasionally I listen to my own inner voice and I save it to draft. And then I didn't send it, right? Which means, then the next day I came back, opened the original email and said, oh, it wasn't what I thought. He was saying it's something perfectly innocent, perfectly like mundane, absolutely doesn't require a 1 hour long email reply. Just need a yes or no, and that's the end of the story, isn't it? So what has actually happened is instead of directly reading what are the words on the computer screen, and I have got myself caught up in thoughts, like thinking. I project certain things onto that email, and I actually didn't, in other words, I didn't read the email properly. I didn't actually read the words. I read a few words here and there, a few keywords, you know, and off my mind go, you know, this big, long, elaborate stories, and out of it comes a big, long, elaborate reply. Right? Usually, I just press delete, you know, delete. Then I realized, it takes a long time to write email replies, isn't it? 1 hour is gone. Just like that, I could have done a lot of work within that 1 hour if I have not got caught up in my own thinking. If I have just very simply pay attention and just read the email as it is, right? Then I would have avoided all this wastage of time and energy and been so upset by something that actually didn't exist. No, only exists inside my head, my mind. Of course, usually when that happens, it means I was stressed. I was stressed about something, unhappy about something. And so if you give me the first opportunity, my mind will automatically project it outwards and react to it. Right? So that is one why I think, practically speaking, it's very important to be able to differentiate for ourselves at what point of time we are directly experiencing what is happening. And as direct experience has to be here and now. You cannot directly experience your past, nor can you directly experience the future. The past is gone. No. You may have made a deep impression on you, but you cannot go back into the past. All right? Nor can you experience the future because it has not yet arrived, right? So we can only directly experience what is here and now. But on the other hand, thinking is far more versatile. You can think about the past, think about the future, and I always say I like to think about an alternate reality that will never come true, right? But I'm the center of that universe, and everything happened according to my wishes, which is why I like to spend hours and hours daydreaming about it. Yeah. All right. So that's the power of thinking. Right. So it's important not to go through my course and think that I'm telling you to stop thinking. I'm not. Okay. But I'm telling you it's very helpful to be able to differentiate, to understand when you are directly experiencing and when you are thinking. And out of it, you can then make your own choices. You can work out at which point of time it is good to come back to here and now to directly experience what is happening. And there are also occasions where you don't have to be here and now. You can think, imagine, or you can remember. Those are wonderful and very powerful qualities of our mind. Right? So, but the important thing is to be able to tell them apart and not mix them up. And not think that you are listening to that person when in actual fact you are simply projecting all sorts of different thoughts onto what is happening here and now. Right? So the first meditation, very simple meditation, is to kind of reinforce this idea, to help you experientially be able to differentiate between direct experiencing and thinking. And also, there's also an opportunity, this first meditation that we're going to do, is to also create a good foundation for engaging in insight meditation. And the foundation is the other type of meditation that we sometimes call calm abiding meditation. Right? So first you must learn how to settle your body and mind comfortably into meditation. Then and only then can you go deeper into your meditation. Because otherwise, for example, if your body is uncomfortable, you will always just stay at that level of trying to find comfort in your physical body, right? So it's very hard to develop deep insight that way. Of course, you have deep insight into how painful it is to choose the wrong posture, because it seems to go on and on like absolute agony. When is this meditation going to finish? When is the bell going to ring? I used to have this kind of dilemma. I'm new. Long, long time ago, I was very new to meditation. I didn't know, so I'll sit for 45 minutes. I think right in the first few, having no idea how long 45 minutes is. But then not like so sophisticated this day with mobile phone. That was a long time ago. So you have a clock, right? Put there, meditate. Then, it's a long time already. Since we have sat here for a long time. So I open my eyes and peek. Oh my God, it's not even 1 minute. How am I going to last for the remaining 44 minutes? Yeah. So if you learn about calm abiding meditation, then you wouldn't have this problem. Because you will find that time seems to pass very quickly. And because you are able to settle deeply into your own meditation. And that is a good basis to develop deep insight. Right? Okay? Does that make sense? All right. So since who is the first time attending my class? Anybody? Quite a few, right? Okay. I'm a bit weird now, so I need to explain to people the weird things that I do in meditation. So I usually do guided meditation, not so much for you, it's for me. Because if I keep quiet, I might fall asleep. Yeah, and it would be very embarrassing, right, for a meditation teacher to sit in front of so many people and then snoring away. Yeah, but it still happened, even in guided meditation. Okay, it has happened a few times. Among close friends, I feel very safe, so I fall asleep. And they say, it's a funny place to stop in the instruction. Yeah. But I find that a lot of people may benefit from guided meditation. It's an additional support for them as they explore meditation. And you are always most welcome to ignore me. Right? This is the first thing you learn about my guided meditation. It is a great accomplishment when the day comes when you didn't hear a single word I said during the guided meditation. You have gone very deep in your meditation. There are different ways to go deep, yeah. I usually don't ask you how you go that deep, yeah. But that means you don't need the instruction anymore. No, you can do your own meditation by yourself. Right. So you're most welcome to ignore me at any point during the guided meditation. Yeah. I present meditation in a three-step process. It's good to try on these three steps, especially when we start with calm-abiding meditation, because I find that they can really help us settle more easily and more deeply into meditation. So you test it out, see how you find. First, I call it acquiring a seat, which is my way of asking you to really pay attention to the type of posture you adopt for meditation. I actually, unlike a lot of other meditation teachers, recommend people to sit on a chair. Right? Usually people don't listen to me, but anyway, I still say it. Sit on a chair and all your aches and pain will instantly disappear. And you'll find that you settle into your meditation so much easily and so much blissfully. No. So try the chair. Remember this modern invention. Right? You know why long time ago the Buddha didn't sit on a chair? Because there wasn't a chair for him to sit on at that time, you see? So now you have a chair, sit on it, and then forget about all the aches and pain, alright? The second step is called helping your body and mind to transition into meditation. This is actually out of kindness to yourself, because we carry a lot of the stress and the agitation in our modern living. We live in a very fast-paced society. Right? We may not be so aware of it because it's all over the place, right? But in actual fact, we are constantly doing something, constantly, So meditation is the very opposite. It's doing almost nothing, right? And so this transition is a huge transition. And it's good to be kind to your body and mind, to give some time, give some space. In fact, helping them to make that transition instead of demanding that somehow just because you sit down, your body should settle down, your mind should settle down. It's not going to happen just like that, right? It takes a process. So you can facilitate that process. This is what I'm asking you to do in the second step. And it's very simple. All you need to do in order to help to settle your body and mind is to return your attention, which is your mind, return your attention to your own body. Just come back and reconnect with the sensations in your body. And you find that something miraculous can happen. That your body starts to say, oh, I used to joke that, oh, the dangerous person is nowhere around here. No, my boss is not here. No, the irritating person. So I don't need to be so tight and tense. I don't have to be in what they call fight or flight, or these days, or freeze mode. No, I don't need to do that. I can start to chill. No, so it takes a while for the body to release all those unnecessary tensions and help the mind to release all those agitation, usually in the form of thinking. Right. So this is the second step. Just by simply returning your attention to the body, which I will help you to do. And the third step is how can we go deeper, to settle deeper into our meditation. And here today we're going to make use of a support, a very common support in meditation, or object that sometimes we call the breath, all right? Because, and here, in line with what I explained just now, I'm asking you to come back and directly experience your breath, right? This is a very important instruction. A lot of time you learn meditation, people ask you to stay with your breath, right? Stay. I'm telling you, forget about the stay. Right? Because if you were to try it, I guarantee you, you will come out feeling that you are a failure. You have failed and failed and failed. Because, strictly speaking, you don't get to decide whether your attention stay with the breath or not. It's not something that's up to you. Okay? So by asking you to stay with the breath, it creates a situation, a lose-lose situation. Right? You'll find it very frustrating. Because your attention doesn't stay with the breath. It's almost guaranteed your attention doesn't stay with the breath. If your attention stays with the breath for the next 25 minutes, you must come and talk to me, okay? Either you are such an expert meditator, you no need to continue this course, or you have no idea what I'm talking about. So
So you are actually all over the place, and yet you think that you have stayed with the breath. It has happened before, okay? But they say, oh, this is so easy. I already know. I have been doing it all my life. All they are doing is they are thinking about the breath, thinking about all sorts of things. Oh, this is so easy. I can feel my breath already. Oh, I wonder what is that person doing over there? No. But they are so unaware of thinking that we cannot tell, as I said earlier, between directly experiencing the breath, which is just a very simple thing, just noticing the sensations of the breath, versus thinking about the breath, which is all this blah, 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 and blah, 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 and blah, 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 you know, in words or in images and so on, right? So this third step is I'm inviting you to simply choose to come back to the breath. You know, you return your attention to the breath sensation, and in so doing, return your attention to direct experiencing. Okay? So that means quite often the thing that distracts us is the activity of thinking. Right? And you will find that you think about all sorts of things in meditation. So one moment you may be thinking, and when you realize it, the instruction is, oh, choose to come back and directly experiencing just the sensations of the breath. It won't last long, okay? Aim for half a breath. Don't even bother to stay the whole breath. Half a breath is an accomplishment in my book, okay? Half a breath. If you stay whole breath, it's good, lah. If you stay more than one breath, it's excellent. But don't worry about it. Then the next thing will happen is off you go somewhere else, thinking. Right? Then you realize it, come back to direct experiencing. That's all I'm asking you to do, okay? And you'll find that the more you are able to directly experience, the less will be the agitation that comes from thinking. And in so doing, the process of calm abiding, settling your body and mind, has already begun. Okay? Sounds okay? Kind of roughly know what I'm talking about? Well, we'll see. Right, so let's try this three-step process. So first step, now choose a posture that you think you wouldn't have to die in it for the next 25 minutes. Something that feels supportive and comfortable. The most important thing is it does not cause unnecessary pain. Right? Pain is what we want to avoid, especially in calm abiding meditation. Because pain stirs up the reactivity of body and mind. And what we are trying to do is to calm those reactivities. So whatever posture you adopt, sitting on the floor or on a chair, try to allow your back to be upright in a natural way. Don't have to tense up the back muscles to deliberately straighten the back. But just allow it to assume a very natural upright position. You can rest your hands in your lap or on your knees, and whichever way that allows your shoulders to be relaxed. Usually, I suggest people to just close their eyes completely, help to cut off visual distraction. But you're also most welcome to do other things. You can leave your eyes open, just direct your gaze at the floor in front of you, or you can leave your eyes half open if you are used to that. So take a few moments, allow your body to find its way into the posture you have adopted. So as I mentioned earlier on, you are most welcome at any point of time to ignore what I'm saying, especially if you find it unhelpful or not relevant to your experience. See if you can become aware of sensations at the points of contact between your body and your cushion, your body and your chair, your body and the ground. At those points of contact, see if you can notice beneath you sensations of solidity, of firmness, of stability, qualities we associate with the ground, with the earth. And allow your body to feel that they are here to support your body, to hold it up, to keep it balanced and safe. So that's the first step, acquiring a
comfortable, supportive seat for your body in meditation. You'll find that given time, as your body settles into this posture, a natural and automatic process can begin all by itself. A process of loosening up, unwinding, releasing unnecessary tensions and tightness within the body. And now for the second step, helping our body and mind to settle into meditation, to make that transition. So I invite you to return your attention to your own body. And here we make use of the breath as a support. So first of all, see if you can notice and directly experience the sensations of the breath within your body. So you may notice breath sensations around the nostrils, when you can feel the air flow in and out of your body. Or you may notice the movements at your chest, a sense of expansion and contraction with each breath. Some of us may even notice the breath at the abdomen, a movement of rising and falling as we breathe in and out. So see if you can, again and again, invite your attention to come back and reconnect with all these different breath sensations in your own body. Allow yourself to enjoy that wave-like movement of sensations flowing in and out, expanding and contracting, rising and falling. So come back to the breath sensations in your body as you directly experience your own breath. Along the way, you will also directly experience your own body. You start to become more aware of all the different sensations in your body. Most probably you become more aware of the different tension and tightness within the body, maybe even areas of discomfort. Also see if you can notice areas of the body that feel relaxed, soft, comfortable. In particular, as you come back to attend to the breath sensations, give special attention to your out-breath. Feel the out-breath and see if you can tune into that natural sense of relaxation that comes along with it. As the muscles of your chest and diaphragm relax, allowing the air to flow out. See if you can notice your out-breath as an opportunity to release. We release the carbon dioxide as we breathe out. And maybe we can also release other things, other unnecessary or unwanted things in our experience. Maybe some of the tightness or tension in the body might just flow away with the out-breath. Maybe some of the thoughts, the words, the images that pop into our mind, maybe some of them can also flow away with the out-breath. A good place to begin this process of unwinding, of releasing, is actually at our face. So coming back to the breath, attending to the in and out breath, alongside the breath, see if you can notice sensations in your own face. Quite often we do tense up some part of the face. Some people will tense up the muscles of the forehead. I tense up the muscles around my eyes, and others may find themselves clenching the jaw, tensing up the muscles of the jaw. And as you breathe out, see if you can gently release those tensions in the face. Consciously let into your awareness a sense of relaxation, softness, a sense of ease and comfort into your own face. So coming back to here and now, directly experiencing your breath sensations in the body, feeling the in-breath and the out-breath. See if you can place the emphasis in this meditation on direct experiencing. Experience the breath again and again. Doesn't matter how often your attention may be distracted elsewhere, especially to thoughts. That's actually a very normal thing to happen. Just invite your attention, come back here and now, directly experiencing the breath. So as you invite your attention to come back to the breath again and again, it doesn't really matter how often you have to do that. That's part of the meditation itself. Come back here and now, experience the breath sensations within your body. And each time you notice an out-breath, breathing out, you might even want to remind your body and mind with the word release, which is a kind of labeling. Say the word release in your mind as you breathe out, a reminder to your body that it can deepen the sense of release. Just like at the face, likewise other parts of the body, other tension, tightness, that are quite unnecessary, maybe they can also loosen up a bit, they can unwind, they can be let go of. And coming back to directly experiencing your breath as you breathe out, this is also an excellent opportunity to release the different thoughts. Thoughts about the past, our memories, thoughts about the future, the planning, the fantasizing, the daydreaming, the commenting. All those thinking activities, we can release them with the out-breath. And let them go. And then now for the third step, deepening meditation. Here we learn to differentiate between direct experiencing, especially direct experiencing of the breath sensations within our body, versus thinking about past, future, or everything else under the sun. So in your mind, as you again and again gently invite your attention to come back here and now to the breath, see if you can learn to differentiate between these two different activities. See the difference between direct experiencing and thinking. Direct experiencing of the breath, of sensations in the body, of sounds in the surrounding, versus thinking about the breath, thinking about the past, the future, or some fantasies, or some inner commentary. And then finally, expand the scope of your awareness so that you can check in and notice how your body is feeling at the end of meditation. Highlight any areas of the body that feel comfortable, relaxed, at ease, and also acknowledge any parts of the body that still feel tight, tense, or uncomfortable. Likewise, you can also check in and notice the state of your mind at the end of meditation. Is the mind still fairly active, quite a bit of thinking, quite a bit of agitation? So see if you can acknowledge that. Or maybe you notice the mind seems relatively calmer, a lot more direct experiencing compared to thinking. And you can also highlight that to yourself. So without judging that meditation as good or bad, simply highlight anything positive, helpful that come out of your meditation. And mentally we can dedicate, we can direct that positive momentum, dedicate it that may anything helpful that arise out of this meditation, may they stay with us, stay and linger in body and mind. Help us to build new helpful habits and continue to benefit us long after the meditation is over. So that's about 25 minutes. Does it feel like a lifetime in meditation? Okay, before I continue, is there any questions or comments? Okay. Oh, yes? Sorry, say again. So when meditate, you feel an itch. Should you scratch it or not? That's entirely up to you. Yeah. You can scratch or you can don't scratch. Yeah. Either way, you can... one thing about why people don't move in meditation is you can discover that for yourself. You see, settling down is a little bit like you have a glass of muddy water, right? You place it on the table to let the mud settle, right? So then you realize any time you move that glass, the mud will be stirred up again, right? Then you have to go and wait for it to settle again, isn't it? So that's just an analogy. So a little bit like when you're deep in meditation, and then you suddenly say, oh, there's an itch. Then let me move to scratch it, right? So you find that moving to scratch the itch is a bit like moving the glass of water. Then after you scratch, you sudden, then you realize, oh, it's sort of like revert backward, right? So you have to wait a bit longer to settle back to the same level. So there's one reason you can experience this for yourself, why it's good not to move. Yeah. Because the more you settle into stillness, not so much like tensing, but just settle into stillness, the more the experience starts to change. But each time you move, you sort of like start over again. So sometimes after, especially you do a long meditation, 10 minutes doesn't matter, you can scratch or anything, but you have been sitting for 45 minutes, right? And then you still have 15 minutes more to go, 1 hour. You really don't want to move. Because once you move, your 45 minutes of hard work of settling sort of like gone, disappear, and you have to start all over again. Not quite. So that's one reason why meditators sometimes choose not to move. Okay? Yeah. So there are other reasons, of course. Yeah, but because if you don't move, you also learn a lot more about how your body and mind react to different stimulation. Like, for example, itch. I don't do it anymore, used to do this. It's a very vipassana way called the hour of determination. That means within that 1 hour of sitting, no matter what happened, you don't move. Of course, if your house is on fire, it's good to move. Lah. Yeah. And so then you get to experience a lot of things that normally we wouldn't experience. Quite a lot of them are unpleasant things because you don't move, right? So you really can see how... you can really experience unpleasant sensations and also our reaction to them. So that is another reason why people don't move. It's a way of training the mind. Yeah. But anyway, the short answer is, if you want to scratch, please go ahead. You want to cough, please go ahead. You want to
sneeze, please go ahead. Because especially those things like clearing a throat, coughing, sneezing, is more uncomfortable to suppress it than to just go ahead and do it. Yeah. Okay, so I hope you get a chance to at least sort of notice the difference between direct experiencing and thinking, right? And these two lies on the spectrum, okay, which is what I'm going to talk about. On one hand, sometimes we can be so lost in thought that you have no idea what is happening around you. Your direct experiencing has become almost like subliminal or all in the background. All your attention is caught up in this vortex of thoughts, right? Which can be in words, in images, and usually they are associated with strong emotions. So this is one extreme, lost in thoughts, right? As sometimes we say. The other extreme, which is quite rare, is pure direct experiencing. Almost no thought, or very few, or very weak thought. And the attention is naturally, not by force, but just naturally centered on experiencing. Could be experiencing the breath, could be experiencing, let's say, a sound or music. Listening to music is a tricky, interesting one, because often we enjoy the music because of the kind of thoughts or feelings the music trigger in the mind. So when people say they are absorbed in listening to the music, you have to differentiate whether they are absorbed in just the sound or the memories, the images, the feelings that are triggered by the sound. All right. If that's the case, then it's somewhere between pure direct experiencing and loss in thought. It's somewhere in the middle. There is a mixture of direct experiencing and thinking, right? And feeling also, of course. Yeah. And so you can notice in meditation this spectrum, right? At first, when you first start meditating, you will find that your experience tend to skew towards one side, more likely to do with thinking. You got lost in thoughts, especially when you are going through a very stressful times. It's very easy in meditation to get caught up in thinking. Or even if you try to experience the breath, there is always a mixture of thinking happening. Right? As you learn to settle into meditation and you're getting good at it, there will be moments, or even longer than moments, just simple, direct experiencing. Almost no thoughts at all. And people experience it as the great inner silence. Because we are so preoccupied with thinking, which usually in the form of inner speech, it's almost suddenly, stop talking, right? This stop chattering, stop talking. There's this vast silence that is so remarkable because it's so rarely experienced. And there's just, it's a very simple, unusual experience of almost nothing happening. Just the breath flowing in and out, just some simple sensations, tensing, relaxing, or some sound, you become very aware of sound. And that's it. Nothing else. No comments, nothing at all. That's why people describe it as the inner silence. Okay? So this is the two extreme. And most of the time we experience a lot more those things in between these two states. Yeah. Alright? Okay? So, insight meditation in Sutra School is to recognize actually a lot of our suffering comes from a certain type of thinking activity. Not all thinking is unhelpful. A lot of thinking are functional, very important, which is why I always tell people, don't wish to stop thinking in your meditation. Right? If it stop, it may not start again. Then you are in serious trouble, okay? In very serious trouble, in fact. Yeah, because you can't stop meditating. To stop meditating is the thought, right? Oh, it's time up, I want to do something else. No thoughts means you're stuck in it. It's a vegetative state. So don't go around wishing to stop thinking, right? It's not necessarily a good thing. But what we do want to recognize is there are certain forms of thinking which is not helpful, and they tend to escalate or
increase the reactivity of our body and mind. In Buddhism, we call that self-centered thinking. Sometimes a more technical way is called conception grasping at the self. Conception are thoughts grasping at the self. They are interesting kind of thinking. They are a little bit like you get caught up in a drama that is written by you, and acted out by you. You are the one person, one man or one woman show in this. You know, everything revolves around the self. And it has a certain characteristic to it. Once you are caught in it, it's a bit like a vortex or like a tornado or hurricane. You know, the thoughts just go round and round and round, usually about certain topic that somehow sort of excite you or stimulate you or get you going. And these thoughts are all related to the self. Me. I. Even if it's directed towards someone else, someone that hurts you or someone that irritates you, it's all about me. How dare you do it to me? How can you do that to me? It's still about me, right? Okay. And it can be pleasant or can be unpleasant. Unpleasant is when you are getting upset, angry. Pleasant is you perceive this person as your true source of happiness, and you're trying to secure your source of happiness. So it's all about, but still it's about me. That's why it's called self-centered thinking. In Zen Buddhism, there is a phrase that is called opening the hand of thoughts. The hand of thoughts. Because our thought, this kind of self-centered thinking is a little bit like thoughts that can be a person. And usually the sad thing is, it's not actually the real person that you are grasping onto. It's an image in your mind of the person. And quite often the image and the real person, there is a big gap. But you have an image, a good one or a bad one, and you grasp onto it. And so it's usually not just one thought, but one thought after another. You can, like my 1 hour email reply, there's a lot of thoughts going on. And that those thoughts are grasping onto a certain topic or certain issue that really, you know, stirs me up. And the thoughts kind of form a chain, you know, one after another. And they spin round and round and round and round. And the more it spins, the more we find we react to it physically. The body might tense up in different way. Emotionally, strong feelings can surge up. You know, could be anger, could be fear, could be anxiety, and so on and so forth. Yeah. And so this is what we call loss in thoughts. Right. Insight is to really recognize it when it is happening. And it's very difficult because most of the energy of your attention is caught up in that vortex. There's not enough, quite often, enough attention or awareness to even notice what is happening inside you, what is happening to you. Right? So meditation is learning to extract out the energy of your attention, pull some of it back, and the easiest way is to pull it back to direct experiencing. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Sometimes you fail, right? Which is when the entire meditation session, you forgot about the breath. You forgot about even the fact that you are meditating. It's just off in your mind and blah, 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 until ding! Oh, I'm supposed to be meditating. I forgot all about my breath. Yeah. So that means you have forgot about direct experiencing. You are caught up and lost in your thoughts. Okay? Now, this is not an easy kind of insight because, first of all, while you're caught in thoughts, there's very little energy of attention available to notice what's happening. So that's usually the first lesson. You know, like what we did just now, lost in thoughts, come back to the breath. Lost in thoughts, come back to the breath. So this simple exercise, train your mind to notice when you're lost in thoughts. When the hands of thoughts are tightly grasping onto certain topic, and then you learn just a little bit, open, let go, come back to the breath. All right, and as you get more better at it, then in the midst of that vortex of thoughts, and this is real challenge to awaken and realize, oh, I'm thinking myself
into a state. I'm thinking myself into anger, I'm thinking myself into fear, I'm thinking myself into anxiety, thinking myself into a state of attachment. To even realize it, that is an accomplishment already. Okay, and of course, then the harder thing is how to get out of it. Then you can really notice how sticky or how strongly the grasping is. You say, okay, what should I do? Oh, come back to experiencing here and now. You can try lah. Because the last few days, I got caught in some kind of reactivity. Say, oh, this is quite embarrassing. But I actually cannot get out of it. The mind is just spinning, spinning, spinning. But that is fine. I think the important thing, what is helpful, is not to feel bad about it and not to label it as a failure. Because the more you perceive it as bad and the more you perceive it as negative, you may not even want to try to get out of it because it's a bit harmful to your self-image of yourself, isn't it? No. Here you are, a great meditator, and you just constantly get lost in thoughts, get caught up in your reactivity. Doesn't gel very well with your self-image, right? It's much better not to be aware of it. Live in denial. You know? It's always other people. Oh, that person is reacting. That one is overreacting. That one is really reacting. It's all projected outwards. But you cannot see yourself. You are also the same. Okay? So don't see it as too negative. Just see it as a habit of ourselves. And then try to learn how to find your way out of it by coming back to direct experiencing. Okay, so I'm going to explain this next technique. I perfectly understand if you don't want to do it. Because although it sounds very simple, it's actually quite painful to do this technique. It's very simple. It's to labor when you are thinking, you caught yourself thinking, you know, oh, thinking. Or better still, oh, just a thought. Oh, another thought. Just a labor. That means, I don't know in Singapore, but in Australia where I was living, people do garage sale. They pack their whole garage full of stuff. Right? Sometimes some people even rent a self-storage unit to store more of their stuff. And then sooner or later they realize they've been paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars on things that they never touched for 10 years. So then they decide to do a garage sale. Right? So you lie along the driveway, you know, put out stickers. And then some people, the more organized one, will put a label, like a tag, you know, tie around the number, I don't know, 100 vases that they have been collecting, you know, and put a price on it. You know. They tag it. They tag. Or tag your whole garage and you realize, wow, I really have a lot of possessions, huh? And I can convert them to hard cash. Then you can save on storage renter, isn't it? So they do that. So our thoughts are a little bit like our storage, things that we store in the garage. Or Singapore have less storage space. So you tag them. Right? You place the tag. The simplest one is the tag, thinking. You think it's easy, but I tell you it's not so easy. Okay? Because sometimes it's a bit like your attachment to all your possession. You don't feel like putting a tag. You say, oh, maybe I'll move it back into my garage. No, I might use it again in 10 years' time. So you move it back. You don't want to tag it. Because once you tag it, it's like giving it away, right? Selling it away. So once you tag your thought, you know, oh, it's just a thought. I have to let it go. No. So you may not want to tag your thoughts. Just as you may not want to tag all your possessions that you have not been used. You don't even know you have them. Yeah, quite often. Yeah, right. So you might encounter this phenomenon. And if you do encounter, don't be too harsh on yourself. Right? That you actually prefer to indulge in your thinking than to label them. Because once you label them, they lose their power. Right? They are just a thought in your mind. They may not actually correspond to reality. Okay? So this technique, it's just an add-on to what we have did just now. It's now you label your thinking. Alright, the simplest one is to label, oh, thinking. Usually when people first start doing it, suddenly they have no thoughts because they have this label. Where are all the thoughts? Just now there are lots and lots of them, and now. But of course, that one is also a thought, right? So you labor, okay. But you won't, it's alright. No, you cannot keep up the hypervigilance for long. Then once you relax, the thoughts will start again. Then you labor. At first it's all mundane thing. Oh, when is this meditation going to be over? Oh, thinking. Oh, why doesn't he stop talking? Labor, thinking. Thinking. So all the, usually are the not inconsequential thoughts will start. Right, not the big ones. Then before you know it, you are, I'm going to Greece, I'll do this, then I'll do that. Usually like 100 thoughts later, then you realize, oh, I have been thinking all those thoughts, I forgot to label them. No worry, just take a very big label and stick it and say, lots and lots of thoughts. Okay, and then forget about it, and then come back to the breath. You will find that the big labor is used very often. Lots and lots of thoughts. Lots and lots of thoughts. Okay? No worries. When you get better, the labor gets smaller. Then when you are very advanced, you improve on your labeling. Then that's when you labor, not just thinking, but you say, thinking about my worst enemy. Thinking again about my worst enemy. Thinking again about my worst enemy. Okay? Right, so you label the content, right? The most difficult one and the most powerful one is what I call echoing. Just have to do it once, echo. So the thought will say, oh, when is Vaichang going to start talking again? And you echo in your mind, having a thought, when is Vaichang going to start talking again? Okay? Or having a thought, and what should I have for lunch later? Okay? So you echo the entire thought, right? You'll find this sounds very simple, a very painful process to do. Having a thought, I'm such a useless person. Having a thought, I'm such a useless person. Having another thought about how depressed I am. So you labor, you echo the entire thought once, so that you hear and see and be aware clearly what on earth you have been telling yourself in your thoughts. Okay, so this requires a lot more attention, right? A lot more awareness of what is it that is going on and on inside your head. Most of the time we are not so aware, right? We've been thinking, right? So there are three levels of labeling. First is just thinking or having a thought, or that's just a thought, okay? Doesn't matter what it is. The second level is you group them, thinking about my future. Thinking about my future, thinking about not having enough money, thinking again about not having enough money, still thinking about not having enough money. Okay, so that is, you group them. And the third level, which is the most difficult one, is to echo the thought, the specifics of each thought. You just echo it once, right? You started with having a thought, and then you echo it. Or thinking, this is, okay. So three level. I suggest you just start from the first one, okay? Because what you're doing is this, what we call opening the hand of thoughts. You're making the thoughts open up. Instead of grasping onto a certain topic and one thought follow another thought, you are interfering in that process. You're making your thoughts reveal what it is grasping at and making it let it go. No. So for example, I was upset about something, then every time my thought grasped at it, I said, oh, thinking. And then it will let go and you come back to the breath. Thinking again, come back to the breath. No. So as you do more of it, you are interfering into this habit of reactivity. And you find that sometimes they're very strong, they're very powerful, you may not be able to do it. But when you can, there will come a point where that reactivity, that vortex of thoughts, break apart. And that will be an unusual experience. You need to experience it for yourself. Right? One moment there are lots and lots of thinking, the next moment, complete silence in the mind. Just good old breath flowing in and out. And suddenly, the one thing that caused you so much anguish
disappear completely from your experience, yeah, for temporarily. It will come back. Yeah. Okay, so that is another way of doing insight meditation, mainly from the sutra school, learning to differentiate between direct experiencing and thinking, and especially how the certain kind of thinking is actually the source of our suffering. Right? Yeah. Yeah. There is no need to do that other activity of judging the thoughts. You just label it. Thinking, thinking, thinking. You just label it and then see what happens. No? There may be another thought. Oh, another thought. Or another thought. Sometimes after you label a thought, at first when you do it, when you label a thought, the thought will stop. Then you come back to the breath. Come back to direct experiencing after you label it. But as you settle more into the meditation, you'll find that sometimes it doesn't stop. The momentum of the thinking is so strong that no matter how you labor this thought, then immediately another thought will come up. Then you say, thinking, still thinking, thinking again, another thought, another thought, another thought. Doesn't stop, right? No. So then you just keep laboring. If the thought keep coming, you keep laboring. And then when the thought stop, then you say, oh, I come back to direct experiencing, to the breath, you know, to whatever it is that's happening here and now. Yeah. Is that alright? Yeah. Anyway, talking about it doesn't help, so let's do a meditation and see what happens. So, just as before, first step, find a suitable posture for your body, a suitable seat for your body, and allow your body to find its way into the posture, taking care, most important, that the spine, the back, feels comfortable in this posture. So sitting, we allow the spine to assume an upright position without the need to consciously tense up our back muscles in any way, trying to straighten the spine. Just allow the spine to assume its most natural position. So become aware, just as before, of sensations at the points of contact between body and seat, body and ground. Really let into your awareness that your body in this posture is resting on something very solid, firm and stable. And that your entire body is well supported in the posture, allowing it to feel balanced and safe. And then we take a few minutes at the beginning of each meditation just to help body and mind to transition, set aside what happened earlier on, and come back here and now to settle fully into meditation. So I invite you to return your attention to your own body, in particular to the breath sensations throughout the body. If you pay close attention, you can notice breath sensations in many parts of the body. The most obvious one is around the nostrils or the chest, or for some people, at the abdomen. But apart from these three places, you pay careful attention, you can directly experience your breath and many other places as well. So see if you can become aware of that movement of the breath flowing in and out, expanding, contracting, rising and falling. And see if you can use as little effort as you can possibly get away with. Don't have to try hard, and definitely do not try harder. Just settle back, allow that sensations to come fully into your awareness, and just allow yourself to enjoy, especially the out-breath and the sense of release that comes along each time as you breathe out. Coming back to direct experience of your own breath. As you breathe out, remind yourself that you can release. You can release the reactivities of the body, the tension, the tightness that are not necessary, such as those in the face. Releasing the tension in your face, let into your awareness a sense of softness, of ease and comfort in your face. And also you can release the mind from reactivity, usually in the form of thinking about past, about future, or some ongoing inner commentary. So in this first few minutes, you don't have to labor, you just have to, as you notice yourself thinking, remind yourself to come back to the breath, and as you breathe out, deepen the sense of release. Coming back to the breath, and especially when you experience directly your out-breath, remind yourself with the word release. You can help the body to release unnecessary tensions, you can help the mind to set aside all the different preoccupations or the thoughts. Let them go, so that you can help body and mind to release and settle more and more comfortably into meditation. And then for the third step, deepening meditation. So in this insight meditation, this form of insight meditation, the instruction is to come back, directly experience the breath if you can. And on occasion you notice, you become aware that your attention is drawn away, is caught up in thoughts, to apply a simple labor, thinking. Or simple labor such as just a thought. Do it like you are putting on a price tag on one of your prized possessions hidden away in your garage. Don't try to destroy every single thing you are putting a tag on. Likewise, don't try to destroy your thoughts. Don't try to get rid of it. Simply labor it clearly as a thought, labor it as thinking. So that you can see it, so that you know it for what it is, and so that you can let it go. Come back to the breath again and again, come back to here and now. coming back to directly experiencing your breath again and again, and highlight the contrast, notice the contrast between direct experiencing and being lost in thoughts. When you can apply a simple label to each of those thoughts, or lump them together and apply a big label, lots of thoughts, help you see clearly when you are thinking and when you are directly experiencing. Coming back to the breath, as you apply your labor, don't worry too much about evaluating your thoughts. See them clearly for what they are. Apply the labor thinking and set them aside. It's like a garage sale. Don't worry too much about which one are good, which one are bad. The good one, you become attached and you want to hold on to it. The bad one, you develop aversion, you want to get rid of them. Instead of being caught up in these reactions, simply apply the labor thinking and let them go. Come back to the breath, to here and now. Come back to directly experiencing your life, the reality of this moment. So remember to come back to the breath, come back to directly experiencing what is happening here and now, and differentiate clearly in your mind so that you are aware when your attention is caught up in thinking. Label your thoughts with a simple label, thinking, and let them go. And then just as before, at the end of the meditation, just check in and notice the states of your body and mind. Notice which parts of the body might feel comfortable feelings, and acknowledge any uncomfortable, unpleasant sensations in the body. And check in and notice the state of your mind, the quality of your attention. Is it very much caught up in thinking? Or is it very much staying with direct experiencing? Or maybe it's a mixture of both. See if you can highlight anything positive or helpful that come out of this meditation, and dedicate that may they stay with you, linger in body and mind, to continue to benefit you. Okay, so there is about 20 minutes of meditation. This is an insight meditation. That means out of it comes insight as a product, some understanding of yourself. Strictly speaking, our life only happens here and now. That's the reality. The past and the future. Past, of course, is something we need to reckon with, but past is over. It's not coming back. Future, although it's something we need to plan for and prepare for, has not yet happened. So reality only happens here and now. And if your attention is most of the time not here and now, who on earth is living your life? And who is experiencing your life? No. So the whole idea of this type of meditation is to, on one hand, draw your attention back to where reality resides, which is here and now. Right here and now, the stressors in your life are not present, unless you bring them along with you, yeah? Which is why I usually joke about corporate mindfulness meditation at the office space. Because the truth is, the person that is most stressing you out might be sitting right next to you. No, and here you are asked to share your meditation experience. You cannot say that, I really want my boss to get lost, right? So the setting sometimes is not quite right for settling down or for relaxing. And likewise, in this kind of insight meditation, you gain insight into the type of thoughts that preoccupy your attention, your mind. Where your thoughts goes to is also where your attention is caught up in. And you can really see, and different people do things differently. Some people dwell a lot on the past, others dwell a lot on the future, and still others dwell a lot on daydreaming. Most are very creative, but not necessarily the most productive kind of dwelling of the attention. And out of that, you can see how we deal with our life. Right, in the form of how we think about it. And in this meditation, by labeling those thoughts, without judging them, you gain insight into your own habits. Right, some of those habits are good, wonderful. Some people are very creative, they are very imaginative, wonderful. And other habits are not so banal. They may be a little bit more malicious. You know, we find ourselves going over and over again things that upset us, even long after the thing or even the person may have passed away. We are still caught up in those thoughts and with all the emotions that stir up by those thoughts, and also not just emotions but even bodily reactions. Sometimes one moment we feel very relaxed and then next moment a thought pops into your mind and you find yourself really tensing up as you get caught in those thinking. Right. It's almost as if you relieve or you are living that experience, right? A negative, unpleasant experience. So you can get very tense up. The most extreme case of being lost in thoughts happen when people experience like post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and you have what we call a flashback. A flashback is you go through a trauma, and suddenly you might be sitting here perfectly fine, and you find your mind throw you back into that traumatic experience. No, the sight, the sound, the smell, everything come back. You basically relive an awful experience all over again. And that's how powerful our mind can be. You know, you could be sitting in complete safety and feel that you are in an extreme dangerous situation. And you have all the full reaction, all the fear, all the anxiety, everything just come back to you in that moment, right? So that is the power of the mind. And so we need to understand and try to change the habits of the mind. You don't want to be, you know, reliving traumatic experience over and over again, isn't it? So we learn to recognize what is happening, come back to this moment. And usually, we are all very resilient. You know? When we come back to this moment, quite often we can deal with the present moment reality. Of course, it's unfair to ourselves to expect us to deal with the past, because the past is no longer around, or to be prepared for all possible future occurrences. I mean, there are infinite possibilities of the future. But if we come back here and now, quite often we are all right. We can deal with it. We can handle what is going on, and we can carry on from there. Right? So that is one form of insight we can gain. Any last questions? Usually there isn't, but anyway, I will ask. Any last questions? How to reconcile the observer and the observed. Come back next Saturday, and I'll tell you how you don't reconcile them, you dissolve the distinction. You realize that actually maybe there isn't. Because when you do this kind of meditation, you have a sense that there is an observer observing the thoughts, right? So there is a duality, as we call it in meditation circle, between an observer and observed. Next week, I will hope to teach you how to realize there is no such distinction. You dissolve the distinction. That's how you resolve it. Okay? Sounds good. Good for a good advertisement for next week. Huh? Yeah. Anyway, please enjoy the long weekend, and I hope to see you next week. Thank you very much for your attention.